Chapter 9 Decisions. 3 days passed with heat and damp that seemed to sap even the Tyran's strength. The city slowed to a lethargic walk, the stone to a crawl. Servants worked nearly in their sleep, and the Majira tore her coiled braids in frustration. But even she could not find the energy to rap knuckles or flick ears with a hard finger. Defenders of the stone slumped at their posts like half-melted candles, and the officers showed more interest in chilled wine than in making their rounds. The High Lords kept largely to their apartments, sleeping through the hottest part of the day, and a few left the stone entirely for the relative cool of estates far to the east on the slopes of the spine of the world. Oddly, only the Outlanders, who felt the heat worst of all, pushed on with their lives as hard as ever, if not harder. For them, the heavy heat did not weigh nearly as much as did the hours rushing by. Matt quickly discovered that he had been right about the young lords who saw the playing cards try to kill him. Not only did they avoid him, they spread the word among their friends, often garbled. No one in the stone who had 2 pieces of silver in hand would say more than hasty excuses while backing away. The rumors spread beyond the lordlings. More than one serving woman who had enjoyed a cuddle now declined too, and 2 said uneasily that they had heard it was dangerous to be alone with him. Perrin appeared all wrapped up in his own worries, and Tom seemed to vanish by sleight of hand. Matt had no idea what occupied the gleeman, but he was seldom to be found, day or night. Moraine, the one person Matt wished would ignore him, instead seemed to be there whenever he turned around. She was just passing by or crossing the corridor in the distance, but her eyes met his every last time, looking as if she knew what he was thinking and what he wanted. Knew how she was going to make him do exactly what she wanted instead. None of it made any difference in one respect. He still managed to find excuses to put off leaving for another day. As he saw it, he had not promised Egwene he would stay, but he did. Once, he carried a lamp down into the belly of the stone to the so-called Great Holding, as far as the dry-rotted door at the far end of the narrow hallway. A few minutes of peering into the shadowy interior at dim shapes covered with dusty canvas, roughly stacked crates and barrels, their flat ends used as shelves for jumbles of figurines and carvings and peculiar things of crystal and glass and metal. A few minutes of that, and he hurried away muttering, "I'd have to be the biggest bloody fool in the whole bloody world." Nothing kept him from going into the city, though, and there was no chance at all meeting Moraine in the dockside taverns of the Mola, the port district, or the inns in the Chalm, where the warehouses were, dimly lit, cramped, often dirty, places of cheap wine, bad ale, occasional fights, and unending dice games. The stakes in the dice games were small compared to what he had grown used to, but that was not why he always found himself back in the stone after a few hours. He tried not to think about what always drew him back, near to Rand. Perrin sometimes saw Matt in the waterfront taverns, drinking too much cheap wine, dicing as if he did not care whether he won or lost, once flashing a knife when a burly shipman pressed him on how often he did win. It was not like Matt to be so irritable, but Perrin avoided him instead of trying to find out what was troubling him. Perrin was not there for wine or dice, and the men who thought of fighting changed their minds after a good look at his shoulders and his eyes. He bought bad ale, though, for sailors in wide leather trousers and for under-merchants with thin silver chains across their coat fronts. For any man who looked to be from a distant land. It was rumor he hunted, word of something that might draw Fael away from Tyr, away from him. He was sure if he found an adventure for her, something that smacked of a chance at putting her name in the stories, she would go. She pretended to understand why he had to stay, but occasionally she still hinted that she wanted to leave and hoped he would go with her. He was certain the right bait would pull her, without him. Most rumors she would know for outdated twistings of the truth, just as he did. The war that burned along the Arath Ocean was said to be the work of a people no one had ever heard of before, called the Sawchin or something like it. He heard many variations from many tellers. A strange folk who might be Arthur Hawkwing's armies come back after 1,000 years. One fellow, a Tarabonner, in a round red hat and a mustache as thick as a bull's horns, solemnly informed him that Hawkwing himself led these people, his legendary sword Justice in hand. There were rumors that the fabled Horn of Valir, meant to call dead heroes from the grave to fight in the last battle, had been found. In Gil'dan, riots had broken out all over the country. Ilion was suffering from outbreaks of massive madness. In Kyrian, famine was slowing the killing. Someplace in the borderlands, Trolloc raids were on the increase. Perrin could not send Fael into any of that, not even to get her away from Tyr. Reports of trouble in Saldaea seemed promising. Her own home must be attractive to her. And he had heard that Mazrim Tame, the false dragon, was safely in Aes Sedai hands. But no one knew what sort of trouble. Making something up would do no good. Whatever he found, she would surely ask her own questions before chasing after it. Besides, any turmoil in Saldaea might easily be as bad as the other things he heard. He could not tell her where he was spending his time, either, because she would inevitably ask why. She knew he was not Matt, to enjoy lolling about taverns. He had never been good at lying, so he put her off as best he could, and she began to give him long, silent, slanted looks. All he could do was redouble his efforts to find a tale to lure her away. He had to send her away from him before he got her killed. He had to.
Egwene and Nynaeve spent more hours with Joya and Amiko to no avail. Their stories never wavered. Over Nynaeve's protests, Egwene even tried telling each of them what the other had said to see if anything joggled loose. Amiko stared at them, whining that she had never heard any such plan. But it might be true, she added. It might. She sweated with eagerness to please. Joya coolly told them to go to Tanchico if they wished. It is an uncomfortable city now, I hear, she said smoothly, raven eyes glittering. The king holds little more than the city itself, and I understand the Panarch has ceased keeping civil order. Strong arms and quick knives rule Tanchico. But go, if it pleases you. No word came from Tar Valon, nothing to say if the Armorlin was dealing with the possible threat of free Mazrim time. There had been plenty of time for a message to come, by quick riverboat or a man changing horses, since Moiraine had sent the pigeons, provided she had sent them. Egwene and Nynaeve argued about that. Nynaeve admitted the Aes Sedai could not lie, but she tried to find some twist in Moiraine's words. Moiraine did not seem to fret over the lack of response from the Armorlin, though it was hard to tell through her crystal calm. Egwene did fret over it, and over whether Tanchico was a false trail or a real one or a trap. The Stone's library held books about Tarabon and Tanchico, but though she read until her eyes ached, she found no clue to anything dangerous to Rand. Heat and worry did nothing for her temper. She was sometimes as snappish as Nynaeve. Some things were going well, of course. Matt was still in the Stone. Obviously, he really was growing up and learning about responsibility. She regretted failing him, but she was not certain any woman in the tower could have done more. She understood his thirst to know because she thirsted too, although for other knowledge, for the things she could only learn in the tower, the things she might discover that no one else had known how to do before, the lost things she might relearn. Avienda began to visit with Egwene, apparently of her own choice. If the woman was wary at first, well, she was Aiel, after all, and she did think Egwene was full Aes Sedai. Still, her company was enjoyable, although Egwene sometimes thought she saw unasked questions in her eyes. If Avienda kept her reserve, it soon became apparent that she had a quick wit and a sense of humor akin to Egwene's. They sometimes ended up giggling together like girls. Aiel ways were nothing Egwene was used to, though, such as Avienda's discomfort at sitting in a chair and her shock at finding Egwene in her bath, a silver-plated tub the Majira had brought up. Not shock at walking in on her naked. In fact, when she saw that Egwene was uncomfortable, she peeled off her own clothes and sat down on the floor to talk. But at seeing Egwene sitting chest-deep in water, it was dirtying so much water that made her eyes pop. For another thing, Avienda refused to understand why she and Elaine had not done something drastic to Berylaine, since they wanted her out of the way. It was all but forbidden for a warrior to kill a woman not wed to the spear. But since neither Elaine nor Berylaine were maidens of the spear, it was apparently quite all right, in Avienda's view, for Elaine to challenge the first of Mayen to fight with knives, or failing that, with fists and feet. Knives were best, as she saw it. Berylaine looked the sort of woman who could be beaten several times without giving up. Best simply to challenge and kill her. Or Egwene could do it for her, as friend and near sister. Even with that, it was a pleasure to have someone to talk and laugh with. Elaine was occupied most of the time, of course, and Nynaeve, seeming to feel the rush of time as keenly as Egwene, gave her free moments over to moonlit walks on the battlements with Lan, and to preparing foods the warder liked with her own hands, not to mention curses that sometimes drove the cooks from the kitchen. Nynaeve did not know very much about cooking. If not for Avienda, Egwene was not sure what she would have done in the muggy hours between questionings of the dark friends, sweated undoubtedly, and worried that she might have to do something that gave her nightmares thinking of it. By agreement, Elaine was never present at those questionings. One more set of ears listening would make no difference. Instead, whenever Rand had a moment to spare, the daughter heir just happened to be close by, to talk, or simply walk holding his arm, even if it was only from a meeting with some high lords to a room where others waited, or to a lightning inspection of the defenders' quarters. She became quite good at finding secluded corners where the two of them could pause, alone. Of course, he always had Aiel trailing after him, but she soon cared as little for what they thought as for what her mother would. She even entered a sort of conspiracy with the maidens of the spear. They seemed to know every hidden nook in the stone, and they let her know whenever Rand was alone. They seemed to think the game great sport. The surprise was that he asked her about the governing of nations and listened to what she said. That she wished her mother could see. More than once Morghese had laughed, half despairingly, and told her she had to learn to concentrate. Which crafts to protect and how, and which not and why, might be dry decisions, but as important as how to care for the sick. It might be fun to guide a stubborn lord or merchant into doing what he did not want to while thinking it was his own idea. It might be warming to feed the hungry. But if the hungry were to be fed, it was necessary to decide how many clerks and drivers and wagons were needed. Others might arrange it, but then you would never know until it was too late whether they had made a mistake. He listened to her and often took her advice. She thought she could have loved him for those two things alone. Berylaine was not setting foot outside her chambers. Rand had begun smiling as soon as he saw her. Nothing could be finer about the world. Unless the days could stop passing. 3 short days, slipping away like water through her fingers. Joya and Amiko would be sent north, and the reason for staying in Tyr would vanish. It would be time for her and Egwene and Nynaeve to leave, too. She would go. When that time came, she had never considered not. Knowing that made her proud of behaving like a woman, not a girl. Knowing it made her want to cry.
And Rand? He met with high lords in his chambers and issued orders. He startled them by appearing at secret gatherings of 3 or 4 that Tom had ferreted out, just to reiterate some point from his last commands. They smiled and bowed and sweated and wondered how much he knew. A use had to be found for their energy before one of them decided that if Rand could not be manipulated, he must be killed. Whatever it took to divert them, he would not start a war. If he had to confront Samael, so be it. But he would not start a war. Forming a plan of action occupied most of his time, not given over to hounding the High Lords. Bits and pieces came from the books he had the librarians bring to his rooms by armloads, and from his talks with Elaine. Her advice was certainly useful with the High Lords. He could see them hastily reassessing him when he displayed knowledge of things they themselves only half knew. She stopped him when he wanted to give her the credit. "A wise ruler takes advice," she told him, smiling, "but should never be seen to take it. Let them think you know more than you do. It will not harm them. And it will help you." She seemed pleased he had suggested it, though. He was not entirely sure that he was not still putting off some decision, at least because of her. 3 days of planning, of trying to puzzle out what was still missing. Something was. He could not react to the Forsaken. He had to make them react to him. 3 days, and on the fourth, she would go. Back to Tarvalin, he hoped. But once he moved, he suspected even their brief moments together would end. 3 days of stolen kisses when he could forget he was anything but a man with his arms around a woman. He knew it for a foolish reason, if true. He was relieved she did not seem to want more than his company, but in those moments alone he could forget decisions, forget the fate awaiting the dragon reborn. More than once he considered asking her to stay, but it would not be fair to raise her expectations when he had no idea what he wanted from her beyond her presence. If she had any expectations, of course. Much better just to think of them as a man and a young woman walking out together of a feast day evening. That became easier. Sometimes he forgot she was the daughter heir and he a shepherd. But he wished she were not going. 3 days. He had to decide. He had to move. In a direction no one expected. The sun slid slowly toward the horizon on the evening of the third day. The half-drawn draperies of Rand's bedchamber lessened the reddish-yellow glare. Kalandor glittered on its ornate stand like the purest crystal. Rand stared at Mylon and Sunamon, then tossed the thick bundle of large vellum sheets at them. A treaty all neatly scribed, lacking only signatures and seals. It hit Mylon in the chest, and he caught it by reflex. He bowed as if honored, but his tight smile revealed clenched teeth. Sunamon shifted from foot to foot, dry-washing his hands.
"All is as you said, my lord dragon," he said anxiously. "Grain for ships."
"And 2,000 Tyran levies," Rand cut him off. "To see to proper distribution of grain and protect Tyran interests." His voice was like ice, but his stomach seemed to be boiling. He nearly shook with the desire to pound at these fools with his fists. 2,000 men, under the command of Torian.
"The High Lord Torian has an interest in affairs with Mayenne, my Lord Dragon," Mylon said smoothly.
"He has an interest in forcing his attentions on a woman who won't look at him," Rand shouted. "Grain for ships, I said. No soldiers, and certainly no bloody Torian. Have you even spoken to Berlaine?" They blinked at him, as if they did not understand the words. It was too much. He snatched at Sidene. The vellum in Mylon's arms erupted into flame. With a yell, Mylon hurled the fiery bundle into the bare fireplace and hurriedly brushed its sparks and scorch marks on his red silk coat. Sunamon stared at the burning sheets, which were crackling and turning black, with his mouth hanging open.
"You will go to Berlaine," he told them, surprised at how calm his voice was. "By tomorrow midday, you will have offered her the treaty I want, or by sunset tomorrow, I'll hang both of you. If I have to hang High Lords every day, two by two, I will. I will send every last one of you to the gallows if you won't obey me. Now get out of my sight."
The quiet tone seemed to affect them more than his shouting had. Even Mylon looked uneasy as they backed away, bowing at every other step, murmuring protestations of undying loyalty and everlasting obedience. They sickened him. "Get out!" he roared. And they abandoned dignity, almost fighting with one another to pull the doors open. They ran. One of the Aiel guards put his head in for a moment to see that Rand was all right, before drawing the door shut. Rand trembled openly. They disgusted him almost as much as he disgusted himself, threatening to hang men because they did not do as he told them. Worse, meaning it. He could remember when he did not have a temper, or at least when he rarely had, and had managed to keep it on a short rein. He crossed the room to where Kalandor sparkled with the light streaming in between the draperies. The blade looked like the finest glass, absolutely clear. It felt like steel to his fingers, sharp as a razor. He had come close to reaching for it to deal with Mylon and Sunamon. Whether to use it as a sword or for its real purpose, he did not know. Either possibility horrified him.
I am not mad yet, only angry. Light, so angry.
Tomorrow. The Dark Friends will be put on a ship tomorrow. Elaine will be leaving. And Egwene and Nynaeve, of course. Back to Tar Valon, he prayed. Black Aja or no Black Aja, the White Tower had to be as safe a place as there was now. Tomorrow. No more excuses to put off what he had to do. Not after tomorrow. He turned his hands over, looking at the heron branded into each palm. He had examined them so often that he could have sketched every line perfectly from memory. The prophecies foretold them. Twice and twice shall he be marked, twice to live and twice to die. Once the heron to set his path, twice the heron to name him true. Once the dragon for remembrance lost, twice the dragon for the price he must pay. But if the herons named him true, what need for dragons? For that matter, what was a dragon? The only dragon he had ever heard of was Luz Theron Telamon. Luz Theron Kinslayer had been the dragon. The dragon was the Kinslayer. Except now there was himself. But he could not be marked with himself. Perhaps the figure on the banner was a dragon. Not even Aes Sedai seemed to know what that creature was.
You have changed from when I last saw you. Stronger. Harder.
He spun, gaping at the young woman standing by the door, fair of skin and dark of hair and eye. Tall, dressed all in white and silver, she arched an eyebrow at the half-melted lumps of gold and silver over the fireplace. He had left them there to remind him of what could happen when he acted without thinking, when he lost control. Much good it had done.
Selene, he gasped, hurrying to her.
Where did you come from? How did you get here? I thought you must still be in Kyrian, or...
Looking down at her, he did not want to say he feared she might be dead, or a starving refugee. A woven silver belt glittered around her narrow waist. Silver combs, worked with stars and crescent moons, shone in hair that fell to her shoulders like waterfalls of night. She was still the most beautiful woman he had ever seen. Elaine and Egwene were only pretty beside her. For some reason, though, she did not affect him the way she had. Perhaps it was the long months since he had last seen her, in a Kyrian not yet racked by civil war.
I go where I wish to be.
She frowned at his face.
You have been marked, but no matter. You were mine, and you are mine. Any other is no more than a caretaker whose time has passed. I will lay claim to what is mine openly now.
He stared at her. Marked? Did she mean his hands? And what did she mean he was hers? Selene, he said gently, we had pleasant days together, and hard days. I'll never forget your courage or your help, but there was never more between us than companionship. We traveled together, but that was the end of it. You will stay here in the stone, in the best apartments, and when peace returns to Kyrian, I will see that your estates there are returned to you, if I can.
You have been marked, she smiled wryly. Estates in Kyrian. I may have had estates in those lands once. The land has changed so much that nothing is as it was. Selene is only a name I sometimes use, Luz Theron. The name I made my own is Lanfear.
Rand barked a shallow laugh. A poor joke, Selene. I'd as soon make jest about the Dark One as one of the Forsaken. And my name is Rand.
We call ourselves the Chosen, she said calmly. Chosen to rule the world forever. We will live forever. You can also.
He frowned at her worriedly. She actually thought she was... Her travails and reaching tear must have unhinged her. But she did not look mad. She was calm, cool, certain. Without thinking, he found himself reaching for Sidene. He reached for it and struck a wall he could not see or feel except that it kept him from the source.
You can't be, she smiled. Light, he breathed.
You are one of them.
Slowly he backed away. If he reached Kalandor, at least he would have a weapon. Perhaps it could not work as an Angrial, but it would do for a sword. Could he use a sword against a woman? Against Selene? No, against Lanfear. Against one of the Forsaken. His back came up hard against something, and he looked around to see what it was. There was nothing there. A wall of nothing with his back pressed against it. Kalandor glittered not 3 paces away, on the other side. He thumped a fist against the barrier in frustration. It was as unyielding as rock.
I cannot trust you fully, Luz Theron. Not yet.
She came closer, and he considered simply seizing her. He was bigger and stronger by far, and blocked as he was, she could wrap him up with the power like a kitten tangled in a ball of string.
Not with that, certainly, she added,
grimacing at Kalandor.
There are only 2 more powerful that a man can use. One, at least, I know still exists. No, Luz Theron, I will not trust you yet with that.
Stop calling me that, he growled. My name is Rand. Randall Thor.
You are Luz Theron Telamon. Oh, physically, nothing is the same except your height. But I would know who was behind those eyes, even if I'd found you in your cradle.
She laughed suddenly.
How much easier everything would be if I had found you then. If I had been free to.
Laughter faded into an angry stare.
Do you wish to see my true appearance? You can't remember that either, can you?
He tried to say no, but his tongue would not work. Once he had seen 2 of the Forsaken together, Aghanor and Balthamel, the first 2 loosed after 3,000 years, trapped just beneath the seal in the Dark One's prison. The one had been more withered than anything could be and still live. The other hid his face behind a mask, hid every bit of his flesh as though he could not bear to see it or have it seen. The air rippled around Lanfear, and she changed.
She was older than he, certainly. But older was not the right word. More mature. Riper. Even more beautiful, if that was possible. A lush blossom in full flower compared to a bud.
Even knowing what she was, she made his mouth go dry, his throat tighten. Her dark eyes examined his face, full of confidence, yet with a hint of questioning, as if wondering what he saw. Whatever she perceived seemed to satisfy her. She smiled again.
I was buried deeply in a dreamless sleep where time did not flow. The turnings of the wheel passed me by. Now you see me as I am, and I have you in my hands.
She drew a fingernail along his jaw, hard enough to make him flinch.
The time for games and subterfuge is past, Luz Theron. Long past.
His stomach lurched.
Do you mean to kill me, then?
The light burn you, I—
Kill you?
She spat incredulously.
Kill you? I mean to have you forever. You were mine long before that pale-haired milksop stole you. Before she ever saw you, you loved me.
And you loved power.
For a moment he felt dazed. The words sounded true. He knew they were true. But where had they come from? Selene, Lanfear, seemed as startled as he, but she recovered quickly.
You've learned much. You have done much I'd not have believed you could, unaided. But you are still fumbling your way through a maze in the dark, and your ignorance may kill you. Some of the others fear you too much to wait. Samael, Ravin, Mogideon. Others, perhaps, but those of a certainty. They will come after you. They will not try to turn your heart. They will come at you by stealth, destroy you while you sleep, because of their fear. But there are those who could teach you, show you what you once knew. None would dare oppose you then.
Teach me? You want me to let one of the Forsaken teach me?
One of the Forsaken, a male Forsaken. a man who had been Aes Sedai in the Age of Legends, who knew the ways of channeling. Knew how to avoid the pitfalls, knew...
As much had been offered him before.
No. Even if it is offered, I'd refuse, and why should it be? I oppose them, and you. I hate everything you've done, everything you stand for.
Fool, he thought. Trapped here, and I spout defiance like some idiot in a story who never suspects he might make his captor angry enough to do something about it.
But he could not force himself to take the words back. Stubbornly, he plowed ahead and made it worse.
I'll destroy you if I can. You and the Dark One, and every last Forsaken.
A dangerous gleam flashed in her eyes and was gone.
Do you know why some of us fear you? Do you have any idea?
Because they are afraid the Great Lord of the Dark will give you a place above them.
Rand surprised himself by managing a laugh.
Great Lord of the Dark? Can't you say his true name either? Surely you don't fear to attract his attention, as decent people do, or do you?
It would be blasphemy, she said simply.
They are right to be afraid, Samael and the rest. The Great Lord does want you. He wants to exalt you above all other men. He told me.
That's ridiculous. The Dark One is still bound in Sheol Ghul, or I would be fighting Tarmon Gaydon right now. And if he knows I exist, he'd want me dead. I mean to fight him.
Oh, he knows. The Great Lord knows more than you would suspect. It is possible to talk with him. Go to Sheol Ghul, into the Pit of Doom, and you can hear him. You can bathe in his presence.
A different light shone on her face now. Ecstasy. She breathed through parted lips and for a moment seemed to stare at something distant and wondrous.
Words cannot even begin to describe it. You must experience it to know. You must.
She was seeing his face again, with eyes large and dark and insistent.
Kneel to the Great Lord, and he will set you above all others. He will leave you free to reign as you will, so long as you bend knee to him only once, to acknowledge him. No more than that. He told me this. Asmodean will teach you to wield the power without it killing you. Teach you what you can do with it. Let me help you. We can destroy the others. The Great Lord will not care. We can destroy all of them, even Asmodean, once he has taught you all you need to know. You and I can rule the world together under the Great Lord forever.
Her voice dropped to a whisper, equal parts eagerness and fear.
Two great Sa'angreal were made just before the end. One that you can use, one that I can. Far greater than the sword. Their power is beyond imagining. With those, we could even challenge the Great Lord himself. Even the Creator.
You are mad, he said raggedly. The Father of Lies says he will leave me free. I was born to fight him. That is why I am here, to fulfill the prophecies. I'll fight him and all of you, until the last battle, until my last breath.
You do not have to. Prophecy is no more than the sign of what people hope for. Fulfilling the prophecies will only bind you to a path leading to Tarmon Gaydon and your death. Mogideon, or even Samael, can destroy your body. The Great Lord of the Dark can destroy your soul. An end utter and complete. You will never be born again, no matter how long the wheel of time turns.
No!
For what seemed a long time, she studied him. He could almost see the scales weighing alternatives.
I could take you with me, she said finally. I could have you turn to the Great Lord, whatever you want or believe. There are ways.
She paused, perhaps to see if her words had had any effect. Sweat rolled down his back, but he kept his face straight. He would have to do something, whether he had a chance or not. A second attempt to reach Sidene battered vainly against that invisible barrier. He let his eyes wander as if he were thinking. Kalandor was behind him, as far out of reach as the other side of the Arath Ocean. His belt knife lay on the table by the bed, together with a half-made fox he had been carving. The shapeless lumps of metal mocking him from above the fireplace, a drably clad man slipping in at the doors with a knife in his hand, the books lying everywhere. He turned back to Lanfear, tensing.
"You were always stubborn," she muttered. "I won't take you this time. I want you to come to me of your own will, and I will have it."
"What is the matter? You're frowning."
A man slipping in at the doors with a knife. His eyes had slid past the fellow almost without seeing. Instinctively, he pushed Lanfear out of the way and reached for the true source. The shield blocking him vanished as he touched it, and his sword was in his hands like a red-gold flame. The man rushed at him, knife held low and point up for a killing stroke. Even then it was difficult to keep his eyes on the fellow, but Rand pivoted smoothly, and the wind blows over the wall took off the hand holding the knife and finished by driving through his assailant's heart. For an instant he stared into dull eyes, lifeless while that heart still pumped, then pulled his blade free.
"A gray man."
Rand took what felt like his first breath in hours. The corpse at his feet was messy, bleeding onto the scroll-worked carpet, but there was no difficulty in fixing an eye on him now. It was always that way with the Shadow's assassins. When they were noticed, it was usually too late.
"This makes no sense. You could have killed me easily. Why distract me for a gray man to sneak up on me?"
Lanfear was watching him warily.
"I make no use of the soulless. I told you there are differences among the chosen. It seems I was a day late in my judgment, but there is still time for you to come with me, to learn, to live. That sword,"
she all but sneered.
"You do not do the tenth part of what you can. Come with me and learn. Or do you mean to try to kill me now? I loosed you to defend yourself."
Her voice, her stance, said she expected an attack, or at the very least was ready to counter it. But that was not what stopped him, any more than her loosing the bonds in the first place. She was one of the Forsaken. She had served evil so long, she made a black sister look like a newborn babe. Yet he saw a woman. He called himself 9 kinds of fool, but he could not do it. Maybe if she tried to kill him. Maybe. But all she did was stand there, watching, waiting. No doubt ready to do things with the power he did not even know were possible if he attempted to hold her. He had managed to block Elaine and Egwene, but that had been one of those things he did without thinking, the way of it buried somewhere in his head. He could only remember that he had done it, not how. At least he had a firm grip on Sidene. She would not surprise him that way again. The stomach-wrenching taint was nothing. Sidene was life, perhaps in more ways than one. A sudden thought boiled up in his head like a hot spring. The Aiel. Even a gray man should have found it impossible to sneak through doors watched by 6 Aiel.
"What did you do to them?"
His voice grated as he backed toward the doors, keeping his eyes on her. If she used the power, maybe he would have some warning.
"What did you do to the Aiel outside?"
"Nothing," she replied coolly. "Do not go out there. This may be only a testing to see how vulnerable you are, but even a testing may kill you if you are a fool."
He flung open the left-hand door onto a scene of madness.